Coming at you from the Steel City, you're listening to Poor Man's Podcast, Pittsburgh's premier comedy podcast. Your weekly dose of humor, hosted by Chris Hopper and with a new special guest each week. And here's your host, Chris Hopper.
Woo! Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Poor Man's Podcast, Sports Extra with Sports Guy JP. Sports Guy JP, how are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. 500, just like the Steelers. A solid 3-3.
That's right. You're feeling 500.
500, you know. I mean, it's better than what our baseball organization could ever ask for, but 500 sometimes is okay.
I know. I heard that on the radio earlier today. I'm glad you said that. It's like, it's really a sign of the times, I guess, because 500 for the Pirates, we'd be, you know, jumping for joy. And I guess it shows how the team is right now that we're, like, happy with a 500 record, because typically 500 record, we'd already be, you know.
Even, like, for giving up on the Steelers this year, it seems like 3-3 were in a good place, whereas, like, 3-3 for Cleveland's not in a good place.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe just the what you thought the potential of the team was going into this season. We knew that it would be a down year, a slump for them, and everybody. I don't know why everyone's obsessed with the Browns every year. Like, I get that they have a good roster, but until you beat Kansas City or Buffalo or something, I don't know. And I'm not sold on Baker Mayfield, and he appears to be hurt, so.
Yeah, he was actually just rolled out.
For Thursday's game, Case Keenum's playing, right?
Yes.
When's the last time Case Keenum played? Do you know this?
He played, well, he was the quarterback in the, Minneapolis Miracle game a few years ago.
Stephon Diggs.
I think he played the following year after, and he's just bounced around since.
Case Keenum's one of those guys who got drafted, and he was, like, 28 years old, right?
I think he was older, yeah. Texans, ironically, Houston picked him up after the draft, and honestly, he's had a pretty solid career. I think he's been a pretty high-end backup throughout his career.
I agree. I think from what you expected out of him, he was almost like that Brandon Whedon type, like the older quarterback. He, coming out of college, I'm pretty sure he set like every record at Houston, like right. For the NCAA.
You can't argue with the success he had with the Vikings that year. I mean, he was like an MVP candidate. They were 13-3, I think, and made it to the NFC title game.
Yeah, well, then that begs the question, whatever happened to Case Keenum? Because I haven't followed his career that closely.
Well, you know, the same question could be asked for his NFC quarterback opponent, Nick Foles.
Yeah, Nick Foles is strange.
And it's so weird, yeah. Then there was Brady and Bortles on the other side.
I don't know a more of a matchup that's a bigger chasm between the two quarterbacks. And that's an AFC championship game?
Yeah. Blake Bortles got him there.
I don't remember that well. I remember Blake Bortles beating the Steelers, but I don't remember them making the AFC Championship game. Oh my God.
Yeah, they lost by, like, a possession, too. Like, Stephon Gilmore broke up a fourth down play or something, and then Jacksonville was done after that.
So you're telling me that the final four quarterbacks were Brady and then a bunch of scrubs. I mean, not scrubs, but essentially. I mean, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl, but yeah. Is Nick Foles one of the worst quarterbacks to win a Super Bowl? Obviously, Trent Dilfer is up there.
I think he has definitely surpassed whoever number two was. Yeah, we'll put it that way. So Brad Johnson, Joe Flacco.
I always forget about Brad Johnson, and when you bring him up, and just the defense. Well, you know what's strange about Nick Foles is with Brad Johnson and Trent Dilfer, those defenses were like unworldly. The Eagles defense, I mean, they might have had a good defense, but they weren't the Buccaneers or the Ravens.
Right, yeah, it was a pretty high end. Like, I know that Brandon Graham and Malcolm Jenkins, they had playmakers, but yeah, they weren't, you know, like elite like those other guys.
Well, Carson Wentz, I guess, got him most of the way there. And then, I mean, playoffs are a different animal. All you have to do is win one game, which is what they always say. But what are some of the things you took away? We'll get into the Steeler talk, which we like to start with the week that just passed. What did you take away from the Steelers game? It went into overtime closer. I thought they might have actually won handily going into it, especially at halftime, and that was not the case.
Yeah, so before I get into that, I think we should start every show for a recap of Case Keenum's life, then get into this.
Okay, we will, I'll write that down. We'll get into that. We will be, you know what, we probably are already the number one Western Pennsylvania podcast as far as Case Keenum goes, so maybe we can get him on the show. You know what? Why not reach out to him? I've realized while doing the show, you know what? It doesn't hurt to ask people because I've gotten way more yeses than I expected.
And you know what? He has all those jerseys. It's like he's on Josh McCown's level, but you could get like three or four jerseys of his and just throw them up in the background if he agrees to come on.
Who do we think has more jerseys, Josh McCown or Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Well, that's good. I've looked it up before, but if I had to guess, I'm going to say Josh McCown. Something about him reminds me like he was number one, and I feel like that's something I would remember.
He was number one!
Josh McCown, that's what they were talking about.
Let's see. So his playing career, he has Cardinals, Lions, Raiders, Dolphins, Panthers, 49ers, Bears, Buccaneers, Browns, Jets, Eagles, Texans. That's 12 teams.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's more than a third of the teams. And do you have Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Ryan Fitzpatrick. Well, McCown also played a year for the Hartford Colonials in 2010.
How often do you see people leaving and then come back to the NFL? I like Josh McCown, actually. Like, I wouldn't want him to be my starting quarterback, but he had some guts and wasn't afraid. I mean, he got hurt a lot because he played recklessly, kind of. But I always like Josh. I would like him as a backup.
Oh, too. And Fitzpatrick, same story. High-end backup. He's actually kind of a, I guess, low-end starter. But he's only played for 9 different organizations.
Oh, wow. Oh, there we go. I'm glad we got that out of the
way.
What
a bum.
Yeah, what a slacker.
Actually, no, honestly, yeah, if you've played for 9 teams, you kind of are a bum.
I can't believe McCown had 12. I can't believe McCown played 12 years, let alone played for 12 teams.
Yeah, he was, like, never good enough to be a 12-year guy, but yeah.
It's just strange that a quarterback would only be signed to a contract for that long. Like, kind of that many teams in that span of time, he had to have had single-year contracts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess injuries are just whatever. It happens every year. There's a team in that boat. Anyway, if we wanted to get back to the game, I would say Steelers look like you said, had it put away at halftime. They're up 14-0. And not so much because they were scoring a lot, but because Seattle just wasn't, you know, moving the ball without Russell Wilson under center. And then I noticed there's a shift in the third quarter. Seattle put up 14, and Steelers only got a field goal. It just seemed like the defense, which is supposed to be elite, wasn't playing so well, and Seattle crawled right back into it and took it to OT.
Yeah. It seems like the Steelers don't make the halftime adjustments they used to under Tomlin.
I agree. It seems like they always keep, like we say, level competition. They always keep their team in it. And then it always seemed like at a point they would pull away towards the end. Like they'd score 10 points in the last 3 minutes. But now it seems like you said, like the Steelers offense and coaching just seems out of date. It's just like not with the times. And I think that's why you see a lot of that happening.
And you've been saying it since the beginning of the year, if not longer, that Roethlisberger is essentially a tree back there. His mobility is non-existent. He had a couple where he rolled out kind of and looked super awkward. But yeah, that really puts it into perspective. He does not move well at all.
No, it was awkward to see that. Having said that, though, I think this is the first game all year where I saw a little bit of comfort from him in the pocket. I saw O-lines only allowed 1 sack on 10 pressures, and I think I know Seattle is very low defensively.
I think they're one of the worst defenses in the league this year.
Well, yeah, they are. They actually have allowed 5th most pass yards and 3rd most rush yards.
I thought I remember seeing a graphic that they were like they averaged like 450 yards given up a game or something, and they were on pace to like being one of the worst defenses of all time.
Right, and like they just don't get after the quarterback as much either. And Ben, it seemed like he had more time than usual to throw the ball, and he threw a few balls, I think, with some zip on it too.
Yeah, he's so strange because he does have every now and then it looks like he has nothing left. He's throwing like soft balls in there, and then every now and then it just zips out.
Yeah, there he had the one ball completed to Deontay Johnson with pressure in his face for, I think it was like 12 yards, but it was a crucial key situation that they converted. And he looked pretty good even when they brought Jamal Adams. Now, I don't think this is substantial, especially against better defenses throughout the year.
Yeah.
But I would say it's the best he's looked, and it was complemented well with Najee Harris, who was again able to get 24 carries this week and got 81 yards on the ground. So I think if we can balance a run game with some passing and then play elite defense, if they can get to that elite level, then that's a formula you could work with.
Do you have the numbers for you for Ballage? It seemed like he played a little bit more than normal because they were saying how Harris has pretty much played every offensive snap since he's been drafted, it seems like. But I've seems like a I saw him in the game a little bit more than normal.
He finished with two carries for 15 yards, and it looks
that's
like
a hell of an average.
Yeah, he didn't record a reception either. I mean, but yeah, I have seen that. I know, like, Benny Snell even played a couple weeks ago, and I have seen Ballage in the mix as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But we did get a rushing touchdown out of Eric Ebron.
Yeah, yeah. Even the announcers was like, oh, my God.
It was Eric Ebron did something positive. Oh, my God. That's what I said.
Honestly, I like the play call there.
Yeah, he's a big body on the goal line. You're not going to expect it. They said that Ebron has a rushing touchdown with every team he's been on, which is strange, super strange for a tight end.
Yeah, that is weird. You never hear, like, a rushing touchdown from a tight end may happen every, like, 5 years. It seems like.
Yeah.
Like, even if that, it's usually, like, Travis Kelce on a trick play.
Right. Or but, it'll be one of those, like, lateral passes where they consider it a run.
Yeah, yeah. How about what team was it? Buffalo ran the Philly special this week for a 2-point conversion.
Oh no, I didn't see it.
All that, yeah. I think Knox actually threw it to Josh Allen. So
that I would think that of all teams that they need to watch out for, the Buffalo Bills are the team to do that because Josh Allen had a pretty long reception for a touchdown a couple years ago, and he's an athlete.
He's an athlete that people don't really consider. I think. Even Tannehill, who he played this past week, are both very underrated athletes at the quarterback position. Tannehill was actually a receiver at A&M before switching to quarterback, and I think they do play a similar style in terms of their mobility.
Yeah, they're big guys, too.
Mm-hmm. But back to the play call, I like that Ebron, because when they sent him on reverse, I was thinking 100%, he was just, you know, switching to a blocking position.
Which is not what you want to say.
Right. And if you do run a reverse, typically they've done it, like they did it against Vegas with Juju. They've done it in the past with Claypool often. And Deontay Johnson had to carry himself for 25. So they do run that a lot out of their wide receivers. But I think seeing it with Ebron was definitely caught me off guard for a minute. And I mean, that's all you needed when you're 1 yard out.
Since you mentioned Deontay Johnson, I think it's only fair that we mention, because everybody liked to criticize him last year when he was dropping the ball. He seems to have shaken that off.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's worth mentioning. He's played well since coming back. He recorded 9 catches for 71 yards this past week. And I think he just looked like their best wide receiver the past, definitely this past week. And he's missed some time, but he's been consistently putting up the most numbers in their pass game all season.
What's up with the lack of James Washington, in your opinion?
James Washington, to me, was always their 4, and now that he's been moved up, it seems like to their 3, maybe with Juju out.
But it seems like Ray was in just as much.
That's how it seems. It seems like even Washington, I know he requested a trade before the season, but never happened. It just seems like a situation where they've never been able to develop him properly, or maybe he just, you know, isn't as good as we thought coming out of Oklahoma State. But I think that, you know, maybe a fresh start for him elsewhere would be good. It just doesn't seem like the Steelers are utilizing him.
I agree. And it was kind of like that with, I mean, not that he has the same talent as Emmanuel Sanders, but Emmanuel Sanders didn't put up the numbers here that he put up other places. And believe me, that's a much smaller scale because there's Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, and then Emmanuel Sanders. Obviously, the third guy's not going to get as many touches, but it seems like I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's part of the plan.
Right, I agree. He only had 1 catch for 9 yards this week, and like even since like he was always like the preseason like MVP of the team for the first like couple years, and he always comes on really strong and looks incredible. And then when the regular season hits, I don't know if it's just like they have better receivers or if they just don't like him as a, you know, in comparison to Johnson or Claypool.
I don't like him in comparison to Johnson and Claypool, but I do like him in comparison to Ray McLeod. Unless they're trying to get him in for misdirections and stuff because he's not as fast. But I think maybe I'm not a giant Washington fan, but I'm not a hater, and he seems to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't understand why they're using McLeod more than Washington. I'd rather see what I have in Washington. McLeod to me is just like, you know, it's like that Switzer, like Ryan Switzer. It's like you put him in a returner, but then they like use him too much as a wide receiver to the point where that's not his strength as a ball player.
Yeah, I don't understand, right? And I think we spoke about this a week ago or 2 weeks ago about how they're like, the danger is Ray Ray McLeod back to return. Who is intimidated by Ray Ray McLeod as a returner?
No, like that's like the guy you kick to purposely.
Yeah.
In addition to it, Roethlisberger had 40 attempts I want to get to, so they're still throwing the ball, I think, a little bit too much.
Agreed.
And not a single wide receiver averaged more than 10 yards a reception.
Oh, wow. So they're all still just throwing it short.
Yeah, so when you hear, like, Johnson with 9 catches and Freiermuth, you recorded 7, you would expect huge numbers, but no, Johnson went 9 for 71, like we said, and Freiermuth 7 for 58. Najee was 6 for 46 in a touchdown in the receiving game.
I'm waiting for Freiermuth to break out and just have like a 2 or 3 touchdown game.
Yeah, I know everyone's trying to compare him to Heath Miller, and that's what Bruce Arians actually called off Roethlisberger after they drafted Freiermuth and said that you'll like him because he reminds him a lot of Heath Miller.
Yeah, I like Freiermuth. I'm excited to see what he can do. But like that did surprise me when you said he had 9 receptions for only 71 yards. That's when you said 9 receptions, I was expecting like a buck 40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. So it's still a little bit too much of dink and dunk. But there were moments where, like we said, Roethlisberger threw the ball with some zip, and I think he looked more comfortable in that game than any other game all year.
So let's get into the other side of the ball a little bit with Seattle. What did you think of Geno Smith coming in for Russell Wilson?
Yeah, I think he looked pretty well considering that he hasn't played a game since 2018 and that Russell Wilson is very tough shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did go 23 of 32, 209 and a touchdown with 0 interceptions. Even when he came in relief for Wilson a couple weeks ago, he still performed at a much higher level than I anticipated. But Seattle's not going to go anywhere with Geno Smith under center. They actually just claimed rookie quarterback Jacob Eason today from the Colts. So I think that Geno Smith's not in their plans. There's also rumors that they've reached out to Cam Newton to.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cam Newton got vaccinated, so I guess he's looking to play ball and not have to get tested. He wants to be playing, and he says he's all in, but I feel like I hear this every other year,
Cam Newton. I feel like Cam Newton's passed. He's done. I don't see like a second half rebirth in Cam Newton or anything.
I don't either. His strength of the game was being mobile and then using that to set up the pass. He's never been well known for his accuracy, and he's just been nagging with injuries, it seems like, the past like 5 years of his career, and he's never recovered fully.
I agree. I if you're not going to go to Washington, if you're not going to go to New England and have him work for you, then I don't know.
Yeah, but having said that, Geno Smith, I don't think has played himself out of the backup job. It's just, I guess.
I mean, he almost left Pittsburgh with a win.
Right. I mean, yeah, he did take him to overtime and lost by a field goal. And that's what I'm going to get into next with Steelers defense. I don't know, like, Micah Fitzpatrick has been struggling tremendously all year. PFF, if you saw on the game, ranked him 114 out of 115 in his position.
That's almost as bad as you can get. Is Trey Edmonds the only one worse? Or, geez. what the hell is his name? Not Trey. Terrell Edmonds. Terrell Edmonds is who I meant. Is he? I mean, I guess they would be free safety and strong safety, but he's. I don't hear a lot of people talking about him, but I'm not a fan, especially as a first round pick.
Even when he was picked, I don't remember exactly how the draft went, but I remember the flow of it was weird. A lot of players went where they weren't expected, and I never heard of him. And then the Steelers drafted just the best available, I guess, guy in the secondary. I mean,
well, he hasn't been
Brian Clark or Paul Amalu by any means, but I mean, I guess he's probably playing better than Micah Fitzpatrick based off of where he's been.
Yeah. He reminds me of like when we drafted Ziggy Hood. Like, yeah, just like underwhelming, that. Not really a star power guy.
Barely a serviceable starter.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess coming up big though, secondary, what's his name? Norwood.
Yeah.
Yeah, he graded over a 90 in PFF this week.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he played only 15 snaps, but they were crucial. It was like third down pass breakups and tackles. So shout out to him. Not that he's going to be like much of a factor moving forward, but good game, and you know they need secondary
help. Honestly, if you can just be good enough, you can start for the Steelers defense in the secondary right now.
But it, and of course the glue relies, and I still have to give a shout out Cam Hayward and T.J. Watt making it work again.
Cam was ranked number one, I believe, on the PFF.
Yeah, he was, and he graded over a 90 again and recorded a sack. And then of course T.J. Watt. By the way,
before you get into T.J. Watt, one more thing about Cam Hayward. Everyone, please keep in mind Tyson Alualu is not there. Stephon Tuitt is not there. Like the offensive lines have to be keying on him, have to be double teaming him. They know they're going to go for him, and he's still productive.
Yeah, and that's the that was an argument they made after the game. I heard it was, is T.J. Watt the best defensive player in football? It was Shannon Sharpe and Skip Bayless were debating it, and I think they collectively agree. Well, Aaron Donald is still the best. I know Shannon Sharpe said that because he has to absorb double and triple teams. Mm-hmm. I feel like Cam Hayward, I mean, if you're planning on that D-line, he's going to be absorbing double, maybe triple teams as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If I'm playing against the Steelers, I'm doing that and letting Isaiah Bugs try to beat me.
Yeah, 100%. And then T.J. Watt, too, on the outside, and, you know, just let Alex Highsmith free. Yeah. He did record a sack in half, and he finally got it together. I will give him a shout-out for that, but I think we're going to need more production out of Highsmith going forward.
Yeah, he reminds me of, like, the Steelers always have good pass rushing outside linebackers, and he's kind of like the Clark Hagen's down year, kind of.
Yeah, it's like a fair balance between Lamar Woodley and Jarvis Jones.
Oh, God, I forgot about Jarvis Jones. Another disappointment.
And so what I was going to add was, yeah,
him, T.J. We probably have talked about this, but Jarvis Jones, you missed on him, absolutely. Ziggy,
it was a very weak draft class in the Steelers' defense.
Yeah, but still, I'm just saying, from the guys they drafted, they get some studs, but they get Ziggy Hood, and Artie Burns is garbage. Just some of these picks.
Yeah, Artie Burns is probably the worst Steelers first rounder of my lifetime. Yeah, he was like a second team all ACC when they picked him. I'm like, why are you taking this guy?
Yeah, really? Is he even the best defensive back on Miami at the time? Because Miami just puts out athletes.
Yeah, they ended up selecting him. And I mean, Steelers struggle drafting corners. I think often they take a guy who can tackle rather than cover, and then it never pans out.
Yeah.
Because when they reach the NFL, they can't do either. Yeah. So I was going to, Seattle sent the game to overtime, but wasn't there like a clock mismanagement by the officials?
Yeah, Tomlin was all pissed off about that.
Yeah, he was, Metcalf like got tackled in bounds and fumbled, and someone else recovered it, and like clock ran out. It was supposed to keep running, but didn't the ref stop it, and then they kick the field goal.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, in Tomlin's defense, like, you can't allow that to happen as an official, because, like, that easily could have swung a Seattle victory easily.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Russell Wilson apparently came on the field, and they were cool with that. Like,
I didn't hear about that. So Russell Wilson got involved?
No, he was just like, he just came onto the field, and you're not even dressed for the game, man. You can't be there.
Yeah, he pulled it. Joey Porter against Cincinnati.
Yeah, remember a couple years ago when Tomlin walked out on the field while I think we were playing the Ravens, and they had the kick return, and he barely missed. He wanted to hit him.
Yeah, he like had
didn't he ball his fist up and go to like hit him and then didn't.
Yeah, he like definitely eased off the brakes and got tackled. Like, he clearly would have returned that kick. Yeah, Mike Tomlin 100% cheated on
him. He looked like he was going to clothesline him.
And then he, like, smiled after.
Yeah, well, he knew.
Yeah.
But, yeah, then they took it overtime. Luckily, they left with a win, thanks to T.J. Watt. I thought Devin Bush was going to take it the opposite direction.
Yeah, that was another thing, too. Like, they both possessed the ball in overtime. So, like, winning this game, like, It very easily could have been a tie. The offense crumbled in the second half. Defense also struggled to get Seattle off the field. Fortunately, after the second punt, T.J. Watt was able to record a strip sack and, you know, secure the win. And in a year where kickers have struggled, Boswell has come on incredibly strong.
He's the third most accurate kicker of all time right now.
I didn't hear that. That's incredible, though.
Yeah, I think he's the third most all time right now, maybe behind Justin Tucker and Harrison Butker. And like they're
seems like the most accurate kickers are always like playing at the time,
right? But it's also the most accurate kicker is based on percent, so I guess that fluctuates quite a bit. It's not like the most points where you know you could be the most accurate kicker in NFL history, and then 2 years later be 50th.
Right, right. I totally agree. I have to say my favorite part of the game, though, had to have been Jamal Adams dropping a game-securing interception after self-proclaiming he is the best in the nation on the intros.
I like that he said he's the best in the nation while there's a ranking under him, proving he is not.
Proving he's nowhere near the best, but also way better than Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Minkah Fitzpatrick. I was big on Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I still think he's good. I don't know what's going on, though.
Yeah, same. Adams and Fitzpatrick, both, I think. Like, if you guys say who are the two best safeties in the game, they do come into mind. But it seems like it's this position that's, like, a pleasure but not a necessity, and these guys just are not performing to where they should be.
I think T.J. Watt might be the best defensive player I've seen for the Steelers. Like, I've seen watching the game. You know, I didn't see Mel Blount play or Joe Green. I think T.J. Watt's the best defensive player, or at least has the potential to be.
He has the potential, because I remember, like, Harrison and Porter were also coming off the edge, but this guy is, like, putting up the most sacks, forcing the most fumbles.
Yeah, his forced fumbles are incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible. I would probably put Polamalu at one, but T.J. Watt could very easily take it over.
I agree. Polamalu is probably currently number one right now, but just the forced turnovers.
I think T.J. Watt definitely has the potential and is on pace to do so.
All right, let's get into, I was going to say next week, but I guess there's a bye week. Well, at least they won't lose. I hate that. I guarantee everybody listening to this, somebody will say that. You'll hear that in the next
week. You know what's going to happen is on the Texans' bye week, everyone on social media will be like, they got an L this week. It happens every single week, and it's never funny.
Yeah, there's always the same couple memes, and then they just swap them out for whatever it is that year and think it's real clever. Mm. Or you'll get, he's like, I remember just because the NHL season started like a week or two ago. I have no concept of time. But then whoever's leading the league in goals, like after week one, they're like, oh, he's in Art Ross or whatever.
Right, right. Mm. Yeah. It's the first play of the season, and like Ronald Jones gets a 2-yard run, and he's the MVP right now.
It's annoying, but it's funny. Like, it's not like funny, but it's.
Well, the reason why it's horrible is because I make fun of everyone who says it, and then I'll also repeat the same thing.
Yeah, everybody says it. And it's like you chuckle, but it's not funny. The next game that the Steelers do play is against the Browns in 2 weeks. I guess we could talk about that next week if you want to get into some of your picks for this week right now.
Sure, yeah. So this was a very complicated week because we have a lot of good teams against a lot of bad teams, and these spreads were very difficult, to say the least. So I picked 5 games, and I wouldn't say I'm necessarily the most confident in this week, but I felt that it was the best deal I got based off of teams and points. And then I also have something that I want to share at the end called a 4-team teaser that I developed with all of the bad teams against the good teams.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll elaborate on that in a little bit.
All right, let's get into your first pick.
Number one.
So I was very confident with this pick this morning, but they lowered the spread to 1.5. I'm still taking the Denver Broncos +1.5 against Cleveland this week.
Are they in Cleveland?
They're in Cleveland.
They must not have a lot of faith.
Mm-hmm. It was set this morning at 3, and I loved it until Baker Mayfield was officially rolled out. Then they dropped it to 1.5.
That's why you can act early, people.
Uh-huh. So I'm excited this week for Broncos to take on the Browns. I think Teddy Bridgewater will rebound and limit turnovers as he has done throughout his career. But in addition to that, I think this is more of a story of Cleveland just being injured in the most crucial positions on a football field right now.
They have been bitten hard by the injury bug.
Yeah, so where we're at today, Mayfield is rolled out. Chubb and Hunt are both out, and that is what they do well is run the ball.
Right.
They're a run-first team without either of their running backs. And they have a corner who's rolled out already. A.J. Green is his name.
Okay.
But he played pretty well last week, and that was with Greedy Williams, who has missed time and is still questionable this week. And I think most crucially, they have three of their offensive linemen questionable. None of them practiced Monday or Tuesday, and were all had limited this week. So there's a chance Jarek Willis or Jack Conklin, their tackles, could both be out again. And J.C. Treader, their center, could also be rolled out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this is in addition to Von Miller, who said he is going to kill whoever is blocking him this week, and he guaranteed at least two sacks.
I thought you were going to guarantee murder. I was like, oh my God, he's like Ivan Drago.
Right.
If Jack Conklin dies, he dies. That was a good impression, man.
I would give a...
Sorry, the applause.
I also consider Von Miller a credible source. This isn't Anthony, whatever his name was, guaranteeing victory against Tom Brady when they were like...
Anthony Smith? For the Steelers?
Yeah. What was his name?
The safety, Anthony Smith?
Anthony Smith, yeah. Like that idiot who's like, oh, we're going to beat the Patriots and all this. No, Von Miller, this is a guy who's been a Super Bowl MVP, defensive side of the ball. You automatically are credible if you have that title and your name's not Malcolm Smith. So, yeah, Von Miller, credible source. I think he's going to come in confidently. He hasn't had a sack in 2 weeks, and I think he's hungry. He's going to come in and wreak havoc if those linemen are out. Cleveland runs the ball heavily, so they're forced into throwing the ball if they can't develop a run game, and I love Denver's secondary. So I think Denver not only covers but wins the game.
Do you think Von Miller is the best player to play in NFL who has worn glasses during a game? / goggles. I guess Eric Dickerson's probably number one.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Dickerson or Ricardo Blankenship, obviously. I think they have to be, like, the only three ever.
Yeah, so Blankenship's top three. He seems to miss kicks all the time. He might need to get a new prescription.
Yeah, he's. I think he's dealing with, like, a hamstring or something. But, I mean, he was great last year, and now he's struggling again.
Yeah.
Having said it, though, the guys who wear glasses when they play, I would say they're solid. I would say 3 for 3, we'll see with Blankenship, but if not, 2 guaranteed Hall of Famers.
Yeah, we'll see about Blankenship for sure. So you're taking Denver?
+1.5, but I like them to win outright, and that's not much of a difference, so feel free to fire in money line for a couple extra bucks.
There we go. Let's go to number two.
Number two, New England and the Jets play again. They met in week 2. New England is -7, and I still like them. I'm taking New England -7 against the Jets.
Now, it seems strange that they're playing again already, week 7.
Yeah, that's early to play a team twice already. Steelers haven't even played a divisional opponent outside of Cincinnati yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's strange that they'll be covering New England Jets will have been covered already.
Well, before you go too far, because while I'm thinking about it, Jamar Chase, he's impressive.
He's been way better than expected, considering he held out last year of COVID. He didn't want to play. There are questions. They're saying he was dropping the ball during the preseason and the combine, but just natural talents what got him drafted early. The connection of Joe Burrow, he's been incredible. I know his average per reception, I think, is the best in the league at this point. And, I mean, he's my pick for Rookie of the Year right now.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. And that play that whoever was running the ball, Mixon or whoever, and his block downfield, and not to be like the Pittsburgh guy, oh, Hines Ward, you know, I bleed black and gold guy, but that he made that play, that downfield blocking. You don't see that for a lot of wide receivers.
I must have missed it, but yeah, that's incredible. If he's able to utilize every aspect of his game like that, go for it.
Oh,
he's
not when you're done, look at that video.
Okay, he's not necessarily the biggest guy, too, in terms of, like, he doesn't seem like a natural blocker as much of a speed guy, but.
Well, yeah, a lot of blocking with wide receivers, and I remember this from when I played football for a little bit, playing wide receiver, what they tell you is, like, it's good to get a block on him, but if you're just, like, in between the tackler and the guy, just get in the way. And that's, you know, that's more than nothing. And then he kind of did. He was downfield. He got in the way. And then he did make some contact. And he made a nice block.
Great. Yeah. PFF ranks him as 4 among all rookies in the league thus far.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's been impressive. But go back to your pick.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So New England -7 I'm taking against the Jets. In week 2, New England beat them handedly 25-6. It seems like I'm stating this fact every week, but Belichick now goes to 23-6 against rookie quarterbacks. Zach Wilson thus far has not looked like a second overall pick. I feel like the Jets have been a dumpster fire of an organization the past few years, and it's a tough situation for him. But when they met in week 2, Wilson was 57.6% completion percentage, a rating of 37, 210 yards, no touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
Oh.
He was sacked 4 times, and Becton, a tackle, was still out. And I think that New England's just going to get after him again. If you watch the tape from the game, he did not look comfortable whatsoever. And on the contrary, I think Mac Jones has looked pretty superb so far. Got a 79.7 PFF grade, which is the highest among all rookie quarterbacks.
I can't believe how accurate he is.
Yeah, and it's 3rd, actually, among all rookies. So he did grade higher than Ja'Marr Chase, believe it or not.
I did watch some of that game, and I was really impressed with Mac Jones. I'm just hitting the guy every time. And then later on in the game, he threw a pick and stuff. But he has been impressive with that. And before I forget about it, Zach Wilson, not that they're the same body type, but he reminds me just the way he looks in the uniform as, like, the good guy version of Johnny Manziel. Like, Johnny Manziel looks like evil Zach Wilson in a uniform.
He's been compared to Manziel from Colin Cowherd. He says a little bit in play, but he thinks their personalities are a little bit alike, kind of.
Oh, really? Is he cocky?
He sees them as, cocky, arrogant, came from money, but he doesn't see Wilson nearly as, like, you know, like, violent or his, you know.
Right. Well, didn't he go to BYU?
Yeah, BYU.
Okay, so automatically I would assume he's not going to be a lot like Johnny Manziel, just going to, like, BYU, but maybe I don't know. Johnny Manziel seems like, you know, he left the stadium and to go hang out with strippers and shit, but.
It seems like they both kind of have a swagger in a way that comes from money, I guess, but yeah. I guess Manziel uses his money on women and booze, whereas, I don't know. Wilson doesn't seem like the party type, but kind of more just like a guy that has the money. I guess
Zach Wilson's missing out with that in New York City, so maybe he has something to learn. And he could be up in the CFL before we know it.
And Wilson's grade thus far is he's actually 2nd among the rookie quarterbacks in PFF, but his rating's a 59.4, and Jones was a 79.7. So these guys aren't even close.
Wow. So it's just a down year for rookie quarterbacks.
It really is. Jones, not the best athlete among the quarterbacks, but he's been throwing the ball accurately thus far. And New England doesn't have the best receivers in the league, and he's making it work with what he has.
Mac Jones seems like a good fit for Belichick.
He does. Plus, I see, like I said, Belichick 23-6 in his career against rookie quarterbacks. He's against a first-year head coach. And I think Belichick just takes it to the Jets like he always has.
So you're taking New England?
New England -7. Look for them to win by more than a touchdown.
All right.
Number three. I'll go back to Ja'Marr Chase. Cincinnati, they're +6.5 against Baltimore. And I think Chase is an X factor. However, I think Baltimore wins this one by a touchdown.
Yeah, I like that, too. I like Cincinnati, and I still think Cincinnati's maybe a year or two off from really competing with Baltimore.
Yes, they're 4-2, but they have beaten a couple of teams that haven't been the best, let's say, bottom-of-the-league teams. And Their win against like the Vikings, I think, was pretty impressive in overtime, but they seem more of an even match team. It seems like Baltimore, whether it's been, you know, Lamar or Flacco, whoever's under center, it seems like Baltimore has just had Cincinnati's number in the past decade. As a matter of fact, if you look at last year, Baltimore outscored Cincy 65-6 last year.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then if you go back to the year before, their last three games, they've outscored them 114-19.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Yeah. And Lamar is 5-1 in his career against Cincinnati. Burrow's only played Baltimore once and lost, but so, you know, when they do, you mentioned those numbers, they didn't have Burrow at the time. Obviously, this is Chase's first year. But like you said, I think they're still a year off. I think they know that Marlon Humphrey is going to have to watch Ja'Marr Chase in particular on the deep routes. But I think most crucially is that Joe Burrow is still dealing with throat issues that he had last week. And I think going on the road, they're playing in Baltimore, noisy crowd who's aware of this issue, young quarterback, Lamar Jackson wins nearly 80% of his football games. And I just like Cincinnati by, or Baltimore by a touchdown.
Two things. The fact that you said Lamar Jackson was 80% is insane. And then the fact that they're playing in Baltimore, I think, does. I'm not real big on home field advantage all the time, but I think in this case, if they're in Baltimore, it's not a question.
Yeah, I think, especially if you know your opponent's quarterback is having issues with his throat and speaking. So, like, you know, going hard snap or trying to just communicate to your receivers, anything's going to be extremely difficult.
All right, that was number three.
Number three.
Number four.
Number four, I just took this because I felt like there wasn't a better value pick or anywhere else I could find with all these spreads, so I'm crawling back to Kansas City.
Did you ever think you'd say that?
For 1 week until they lost.
Yeah. They had a pretty.
Ironically, Tennessee. So Tennessee is playing Kansas City this week. I like Kansas City -4.5. Kansas City has the potential to beat any team by a touchdown, like I've said. And in this case, I think we have a great matchup here. Kansas City, despite Mahomes being second in interceptions thrown, and despite the turnovers they've had, they still rank third in total touchdowns and have punted the fewest among any NFL team.
Wow. I think Kansas City's going to turn it on. It's not even going to be a question. We're going to look at this and be like, oh, I can't believe anybody doubted Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Tennessee, these teams match up incredibly well, I have to say. Tennessee is ranked 9th in the bottom, so 9th to last in passing yards and touchdowns allowed, and that's where Mahomes thrives. He's leading the league in passing touchdowns. And as we know, Tennessee's secondary is going to have a field day covering the speedy receivers they have on the outside with Hill and Hardman, and of course, Travis Kelce work in the middle. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will still be out, but Darnell Williams filled in nicely last week. And on the other side, Kansas City is 6th last in rushing yards allowed, and 2nd in rushing touchdowns allowed. And there's one thing Tennessee does well. It's run the living hell out of their running backs.
Yeah. I can't believe he hasn't fallen off at all. Because just with the you see running backs, they don't have the career that they used to. Like, you see them have like 3 years.
In a pass-friendly league where, like, speed wins and like power backs fade quickly, it's incredible what Derrick Henry has done the past 3 seasons.
I agree.
And if you look at his past 5 games this year, so week 1 against the Cardinals, who are the only undefeated team, I might say, he only carried 17 for 58. But since then, he's broken 100 yards in every game and has recorded 3 touchdowns. So he's got a hat trick in 3 games this year.
Yeah.
What do in 3 seasons?
Just because you mentioned them, what's your take on the Cardinals this year? Unless they're like your 5th pick. If they're your 5th pick, we'll get into them in a minute.
They're not my 5th pick. They're playing defensively. They're playing much better than I anticipated. Yeah. And they thrive without Kingsbury this week, which was surprising to me. And even with Gruden gone too, Carr looked well or yeah. played tremendously well, which was funny to me with these teams found their coaches. I think Kyler Murray, last year he looked like the MVP, and then teams started like adapting to him. I'm afraid that may happen again. But then again, like, I feel like he's able to adapt the way a guy like Lamar Jackson was able to. He is not as fast as Lamar, but he has that talent level, I think. Yeah. Lamar's unworldly the best quarterback at, you know, running the football the way he does. But Kyler Murray is definitely the second best. And we would be talking, we'd be praising him a lot more, I think, if Lamar just wasn't in the NFL.
And Lamar Jackson is strange because when Kyler Murray runs, he runs like he's a bee, like buzzing around, flying all around. Lamar Jackson just seems so like he sees things before they happen. It's just like effortless, smooth.
Yeah, he's, I think he may be the smoothest runner I've seen, like including Barry Sanders. It is just incredible the way he runs football.
His vision is insane.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, like he's well balanced. Everything's controlled. He actually, that spin move from last year was against Cincy when he broke that run, the highlight of his career thus far. And like I said, I think he's going to have a great week against Cincy.
Yeah, you always hear people like, oh, you can't keep running like that. You're going to get beat up. Well, you can't get beat up when you don't get touched.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No one's catching him. He's faster than the D-backs.
All right. So what's your pick?
My pick is Kansas City -4.5. Taylor Lewan's rolled out already after getting stretchered off the field. So I think that's going to hurt in pass protection as well as the run game, which ironically enough, like these numbers don't make sense to me, but Derrick Henry without Taylor Lewan has more yards per carry and nearly 40 more rush yards a game without him.
That's 40 is a big jump.
It's a huge jump. Chris Jones is back at practice. I think he should play Sunday. So these teams match up well because what they both do well is what, ironically, the other team doesn't do well. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it, but it's still a pass-friendly league, so I'm taking the quarterback over the running back in this game.
Fair enough. Let's get into the fifth and final pick.
Number 5.
Monday Night Football. I'm taking New Orleans -5.5 against Seattle.
Monday Night Football games, I can't remember the last one that's been, like, good. Like, I feel like the matchups suck. Like, Sunday Night Football always has good matchups. Monday Night is just not nearly as good.
Yeah, and I remember when they used to be, like, even, but Monday Night, it seems like they take one, like, low-level good team against a high-level bad team.
It's like they made the schedule 4 years in advance.
Yeah, and then it's like you get matched, like, Bears versus the Bucks. It's like, I don't want to watch that. Or you get, you know, Dallas versus the Eagles.
I was just gonna say, yeah.
I swear to God that every team in that division plays each other 6 times.
They absolutely do. They play at 4 o'clock on Fox every week, and they play Monday night each week.
Like, I definitely have seen the Eagles against the Cowboys 3 times in 1 week.
It absolutely feels like that. I think we said that last week. I hate watching that division. Even, like, if the teams are good, like, Dallas is good, and they're fun to watch, but not for me. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas this year, I think, is actually a fun watch. That they look great, but the rest of that division is so boring. And, like, none of them perform well at any unit on any of their teams. It seems like, other than Dallas, who will most likely just lose in the playoffs.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like I'd rather watch AFC matchups than NFC matchups.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, being an AFC North guy. Like, yeah, I do tend to watch AFC.
Although, I like, you know, like a Packers-Bears Monday night game.
Mm-hmm.
When they're both good. I miss the Bears being good.
Yeah, that's true. This week, two NFC teams. Saints -5.5. This is one of my favorite picks of the week, actually. Because Geno Smith is still their quarterback. He's played well thus far, but then again, it's only a matter of time before he falls off, I feel like.
Yeah.
Saints have allowed 91 points thus far, which is the fewest in the entire NFL, and they're third in interceptions on the defensive side of the ball. I think the Saints have the best offensive line in all of football, maybe other than Cleveland when they're healthy. And that's against Seattle, who struggling defensively, like we said earlier, 5 in pass yards allowed and 3 in rush yards allowed. They sacked Roethlisberger once with that offensive line. Russell Wilson and Chris Carson are still out. And, you know, I think it's a great matchup for the Saints, for a team with Jameis Winston, who can turn it on any minute to throw for yards. So he's broken the 5,000-yard mark before. He has a lot of turnovers, but those have been limited with Sean Payton. I don't like the Saints wide receivers, but I think Winston could turn it on any given moment. And I think in a shootout, I have to go Winston every time over
Geno Smith.
Yeah, Geno Smith. Plus, like I said, they're 3rd in rush yards allowed as well. So look for Alvin Kamara behind that line and against that defense to have a monster game.
What is the Saints record?
Saints at the moment have not been as good as I had thought they'd be. I think they're 2-3. Let me look.
There's no way the Buccaneers don't win that division, right?
100% they're taking it. Yeah. Yeah, Saints. 2-3.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know their defense was that good. I'm not, like I just said, I'm not impressed by anybody in that division. The Panthers started hot, but obviously Christian McCaffrey is due to be injured every October.
I'm sorry, 3-2.
Okay, well, that changes everything.
It kind of does. Like, honestly, 3-2 seems much better than 2-3.
It does, but it's only one game, and guess what? It means they're only going to lose to the Buccaneers by one less game or something like that. Like,
well, they've had that impressive outing against the Packers in week one, and then, I mean, they beat the Patriots, and then they lose to the Giants, so it's been inconsistent.
Yeah, I see that, but I also think that, like, week one, it obviously counts towards your record, but it doesn't count towards the identity of your team, it seems like. I don't know if that makes sense.
Week one, there's always an upset, or, you know, like the sky is always falling after week one, or you have your new MVP who you think is, you know, so-and-so on, you know, right, the Falcons, who happened to score 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. All right. So can you give us a recap of your 5 picks?
Yeah. Denver, I like to defeat Cleveland, +1.5 for them. Patriots -7 against the Jets. Baltimore -6.5 against Cincy. Kansas City -4.5 against Tennessee. And Saints -5.5 against the Seahawks. I also don't think Seattle knows what they're doing with their running game right now. Chris Carson is out, and Alex Collins is, I think he's ruled out or he's doubtful at the moment. And then Rashard Penny's coming off IR. They don't know if they'll play him or DJ Dallas. So I think they don't know what they're doing at quarterback.
DJ Dallas absolutely sounds like a DJ name. DJ Dallas.
DJ. Yeah. So we'll look for the Saints, I think, to handle this easily.
This is such a non sequitur, but like I was just going through Bellevue today, and there was an ad for a DJ named Jay. DJ J, it just sounds like you're stuttering. Like, I just feel like if you're a DJ, don't have that. Don't be DJ J.
Yeah, literally the next word, GJJ.
Yeah, it just sounds like you're stuttering. All right, you wanted to get into one more thing?
Yeah, so one thing I found this week, and obviously I don't suggest this every week, but with these spreads, a lot of them are just really high. So if you have some house money, and this is on FanDuel, you could do a teaser. So a teaser is much like a parlay where you have to go 3-for-3 or 4-for-4, whatever you're doing to hit. However, you adjust the points. So you can go from anywhere from 1 to 14. And if you do a 14-pointer, all the teams you pick, you add 14 points to that score.
Okay.
Now your odds are much, much more difficult. So if you go 4-for-4 on a parlay and you bet $100, there's a chance you could win, you know, over $1,000. Whereas on a 14-point teaser, the odds are set at -223. So you have to bet 223 to win an additional 100 plus your money back.
But that's almost like guaranteed, right? With 14 points. I mean, you would have to be blown out.
Right. Yeah. So if you have some house money on your account, 223 to win an additional 100 is not so bad. And remember, you could adjust it to whatever you want. When I read these numbers, these all seem practically like guarantees, even though we're taking really poor teams against good teams.
Before you say that, let me ask you just a gambling kind of, I don't know, not technique, but just like a thought. It should be better to get what you think is going to win, even if it's not the sexy big money. So, like, maybe it is better to bet 200 to win 100 when it's a 98% chance of hitting versus winning, you know, betting 100 to win a grand, but it's 10%. Like, yeah, maybe you do hit that big one, but you're not going to where you get that guaranteed money.
Right. I'm someone who prefers that too. I like to risk high for high security and then likely win my bets. Yeah. Because getting into the other habit, it's great when you win, but it seems like more of a endless losing streak, whereas the other way you're winning and winning. Now, your one loss, if you do it the safe way, really stinks, especially if you're betting minus 135, so you bet 135 each time to win 100.
Yeah.
So if you win two to get to 200, then you lose another one, you know, you're only up 70 or whatever instead of being up 200. So, like, one loss in that case does affect your winnings. But I think at the end of the day, you win more money over
right.
time.
I would say the net money, which is what it should be when you're gambling, is to end say, the season with the most money. Maybe you lose once or twice, but you hit 16 times versus the other way where you might lose 16 times and hit once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's how I do it. However, I will admit, I did also, before I reveal my teaser teams, I did parlay all of these upsets to win outright.
Okay.
But I only bet one penny to win over 200.
200 pennies?
$200.
Oh, wow. That's a huge percent.
One penny. Now, the thing that's frustrating about this is, even if I do win, I'm going to be kind of mad, because if I would have bet a dollar, I would have won over $2,000.
Yeah, I don't. If you're going to bet a penny, you might as well do that.
Right. So, but anyway, I just threw the penny on just, you know, kind of as a joke. But if you do take all these teams, I'm about to tell you, to win outright, like, it's not going to happen. But if they do win outright and you throw 100 on it, it was up to almost, like, I think it was over, like, 20-something grand. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. All right, you have me intrigued now, so let's go.
All right, so here we go. This is in a 14-point teaser, so minus 223. If you have some house money, feel free to do it. Now, if you do a 10-point teaser, which I may also say, the odds on that's plus 100, so whatever you bet is what you win back, yeah, plus your money if you do a 10-pointer. But in this case, I'll show you a 14-1. So game one, you can take the Washington football team to defeat the Green Bay Packers. The spread was 8.5, but now it's set to 22.5 if you take the 14-point teaser.
Wow. And then, I like Washington to keep it within two scores.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have a great defensive line who's young, and, I mean,
Heinicke has me intrigued.
Heinicke, you said?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to, you know, be an all-star for years to come, but I think he could be interesting.
It's like Keenum. He can win you some games.
Yeah.
High-end backup. Detroit Lions. This is actually a matchup I'm really looking forward to after the Goff-Safford trade. Both guys going against their former teams.
Oh, wow.
So that's exciting. But in this case, Detroit plus 15.5. You take that teaser, you get them at 29.5.
Oh, my God. Dan Campbell did not seem pleased with Jared Goff after this last game.
Yeah, and I love that he called him out. He's lighting a fire, and I love that he's doing that. I don't necessarily think he's the most stable coach, nor do I think
I don't think either of them will be there in 3 years.
Right, right. I don't feel that way either, but I love that he called him out, and I like that. I think Goff does need to show some more leadership and some more emotion.
Yeah.
Chicago Bears against Tampa Bay, plus 12.5, tease it to 26.5. And then last one, biggest spread I've seen all year, Houston against Arizona. It's 17.5 naturally, but you tease it, you get them at 31.5.
Yeah, that's just, those numbers are so insane. But the thing is, you have to hit all of them too, so.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you just do the 10-pointer, you get 19.5 for one game, 25.5, 22.5, and 27.5.
And that's to win what you bet.
Yes. So if you bet 1,000, you can win 1,000.
It's so tempting. I guess that's why it's called a teaser.
And every single one of those games is at least three possessions.
Right. That is a good point, too. And just how do you have the numbers on how many games have gone over three possession wins this season? I mean, I would probably guess you don't have it in front of you right now, but I can't imagine too many.
Right. That's a good point. I never thought of that. But like another thing you do when gambling football that I think is like a strategy is 7.5 spread versus, you know, a 13.5 spread. Like they're pretty close because you can just look at it in terms of possessions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, depending on the teams that you like, but if you look at, especially when it's in increments of three, so more so like 7.5 and 9.5, it really kind of is the same if you look at it in terms of possessions. Like, can my team even possess a ball that many times?
Right.
You know, within that time frame.
Yeah, for sure. Just mathematically.
Right. Uh-huh. So that's what I'm saying. Like, 31.5 for Houston against the Cardinals in a teaser like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, this works the other way. So you can use 14 points and get, you know, the Cardinals minus 3.5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
But yeah. Or you could just, you know, find the other games, even the games that I suggested earlier. Whereas, like, you could just then get Denver at plus 14.5.
Is there a minimum on how many teams you have to throw in the teaser?
In the teaser, you have to do at least three, I think. You might be able to do two, but that doesn't really make sense. You can adjust it. Yeah. And, of course, it adjusts accordingly. If I would have done, like, a 10-game teaser at 14 points, my odds would have been better than minus 223.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to give us for this week?
No, I think as far as the gambling goes, that's it. Also, interesting fact, last week I heard every better quarterback other than the Monday night game, the better quarterback won every game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I believe that. I mean, they say any given Sunday, but really it is who's your quarterback.
Yeah, and it's something I just found interesting. And Brady made a comment this week about how he said he feels like if you really wanted to, you could play till he was 55, just with how the game is. Like, it's you know, a little bit softer on the players. And a comparison they said was like, how many better NBA players do you think there would be if you push the 3-point arc, you know, up a foot?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you're doing that with the quarterbacks compared to what he had in his younger years, like, I mean, that's why you see so many guys playing forever. And I think it's just, like, interesting to see that, like, games has been easier more than ever for quarterbacks right now. And I think it's making the game more exciting.
Absolutely. Sports Guy JP, thank you for your time. We'll check back with you next week. We'll preview Steelers versus Browns, recap that, and we'll see how you did with the teaser.
All right, sounds good. Let's hope for a 10-for-10 teaser and the other, or 9-for-9.
Let's do it. That would be impressive. That would be super impressive.
Actually, let's not hope for the teaser. Let's hope that all those teams went outright and I turn my penny into some money.
That would be impressive. Sports Guy JP, everybody. Please keep listening to the show, the Poor Man's Podcast, available every Monday night. This week we have comedian Matt Light coming in, Pittsburgh Magazine's number one comedian, in Pittsburgh. So that's pretty, impressive. Get him in. He's funny, funny guy. Listen to the last show. We had mayoral candidate Tony Moreno on, for a long time. He was enjoying himself here. I think that was the longest show we've recorded, almost 2.5 hours. So, you know what?
Oh, that's great to see him on. Also, I also had to report, Washington football team did waive kicker Dustin Hopkins and did bring in Pitt phenom Chris Blewett to kick.
Oh, good. You know what? Before we forget, let's wrap this up real quick. But while we're talking about Pitt, Kenny Pickett looks like he's, I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman, but he's up there.
He's having a great year statistically. Now, does he convert to the NFL? I don't think so. Does he get nominated for Heisman? I don't think so. Do they end? I know they have one loss right now. Do they win? Or Pitt, I still think, will have 3 to 4 losses when it's all said and done. But right now, I'm enjoying it. Kenny Pickett has played incredibly well. And he has 19 touchdowns to 1 interception.
That's impressive. I like seeing that. It's nice to see Pitt competitive every now and then. But we'll see. I'm sure they'll drop a game here and there. But I think they're playing Clemson this week or their next game. So if they can win that, then maybe they take the conference.
Hey, Pitt's 5-1. Clemson's 4-2. I did see somewhere before the year Pitt to win the ACC was set like a plus +2 grand or something. I forget the exact number, but now it's only like 150 or something. Like they're a pretty heavy favorite to actually take the conference.
Oh. Well, you know what? Good for Pitt. Happy to see it. And no, to answer your question earlier, Heisman does not always translate to the NFL. Pitt fans know it better than anybody with Jason White beating Larry Fitzgerald. So,
and Pitt quarterbacks don't transfer to the NFL either.
Well, you know, they transfer to the NFL and then sit on the bench and then leave.
Yeah, Nate Peterman and Tom Savage. You know,
hey, they cannot be Tyler Palkos.
I'm still a Bill Stahl guy. I think he's still the best of my lifetime. So,
Rod Rutherford. Well, no, don't sleep on Rod Rutherford.
He has that Super Bowl 40 ring, by the way.
Does he really?
Yeah, he obviously was a key component in slowing down MVP Sean Alexander that year.
Oh, he has it with the Steelers?
Yeah, he won with the Steelers Super Bowl 40.
I guess Super Bowl 40 was in Detroit with the bus. So, all right. But yeah, please listen to Poor Man's Podcast. I think we're going to start doing live shows too, so... keep in mind with that. Look at our Jesus Christ. Look at our Facebook page, Instagram, all that stuff. Keep us updated. If there's anything you want to hear, let us know. But for Sports Guy JP, I am Chris.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. We hope you had a good time. If you did, be sure to subscribe to the show to catch the latest episodes and share with your friends. We can't promise not to embarrass you. And if you just can't get enough, follow us on Instagram at Poor Man's Podcast 412, Twitter at Poor Man's Pod 412, and Facebook. This is Pittsburgh's own Poor Man's Podcast signing off. See you next week.